All right, here we go. Beautiful Friday here in the city as we head into a weekend. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star. We got some big news out of the gate here, Dave. Some big news in the NBA. According to himself, speaking through Shams Charania of The Athletic, Victor Oladipo is pulling the chute on the bubble. It's not going to happen. He's not going to play for Indiana. And if he's healthy, he's their best player. And that's a big, big storyline going into this because we've seen some players who are quality players who have decided they're not going. We talked about Avery Bradley yesterday with the Lakers and the impact that he has on that team and perimeter defense, and that's going to be a big hit. But we have not seen the best player on a team that is a good team, like has a chance to do some damage, decide that he's not going, and that's exactly what broke about 5 minutes before we went on the air.
Yeah, that's a massive hit to the Indiana Pacers, Hayes, and you're right. Like, this is a bit of a game changer. Now, it's not LeBron. It's not, you know, an MVP caliber guy, but he's the MVP of the Indiana Pacers, and they right now, Hayes, heading into this thing, the 5 seed in the East, in an East where there really are 6 good teams, right?
Yeah, I like them, and yeah. They play the Raptors tough, man. This is a big, big win for the Raptors if you want to look at it that way. They may never play them, but if they do, without Oladipo, that's significant because they've taken the Raptors to overtime a couple times this year.
Yeah.
And they played them tough. Like, they're a good team.
They're a very good team, and you don't know how the seeding's going to shake out here. You don't know how it's all going to go down. So, yeah, that's a significant hit to the Indiana Pacers. And I think it speaks to the mentality of some NBA players right now. Like, by all accounts, but when you read this piece by Shams on The Athletic about Oladipo's condition, I mean, it looks like he's ready to go. You got people saying he looks great. You got the physical therapist of Oladipo saying he's in the best shape he's ever been in. But it's more of like a risk reward kind of scenario here, where Oladipo's saying, "Yeah, I could go, but what's the reward and what are my risks? And maybe I'm better off waiting until we begin another season all over again." And you wonder, as you know, we get closer and it kind of comes to nut cutting time about you're either going or you're not going, you wonder how many other guys are going to make that kind of cost benefit analysis and say maybe not.
Yeah, this is exactly what he's been indicating through Shams. Like, he's healthy, but he was coming off a pretty gruesome injury, pretty significant surgery. He's only played, I think, 13 games all year.
Yeah.
And he was finding his footing, but he's had 4 months to get in shape.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to do a list later this afternoon, the 3 players in the East that the Raptors should be scared of. I didn't have Oladipo on my list, but I thought about him.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about him earlier today. I'm like, man, there may not be anyone else in the East that benefits from this break more than him, because now he's got 4 months to completely get back in shape. It's a strange reasoning, because it's a scenario where you're saying, I want another full offseason and another training camp to really gear this up. Well, that's effectively what we have right now. Like, you've been off for an offseason, and you're going to get a training camp, and you're going to get 8 regular season games before the real stuff starts, and Indiana's already punched their ticket. They're in.
Yeah.
They're a lock.
Exactly.
Like,
you
this,
know,
I don't think this is going to go over well in Indiana.
Well, you can't be happy if you're running that club right now. And the question is, you know, what is this really about, right? That's the question. And you know, you've got some interesting quotes in this piece from the guy who is Oladipo's physical therapist. And, you know, one of the quotes that sticks out to me is, this is about mental health too. And this is coming from Oladipo's physical therapist, you know, talking about his comfort level going into the bubble. They've only got a 3-hour window for practice. And the fact that this physical therapist can't go into Oladipo's room to actually treat him according to the protocol. So that's a factor here that I hadn't considered. The idea that a guy who does need maybe that Kawhi treatment where, it takes like an hour before the game or before the practice to get him loosened up, get that. And actually similar kind of injury because,
yep,
you know, Kawhi had a quad problem. Oladipo ruptured his quad tendon. That's the problem that's led him to, only playing 13 games this season. You know, you wonder if these guys that really need like the extensive warm-up and incredible attention from the training staff, and they're not going to be able to get it because of the protocols. You wonder if that's going to be a factor for more guys than Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, and that is legitimate, right? Like that is a legitimate concern. I wonder also if it's more, hey, I want my own guy. You know, and that is Kawhi in a nutshell.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, San Antonio. I don't care what your doctor told me. I got my own guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to consult with my own people, and I'm going to have my own program, and I'm going to bring my own guy into the flux here, and I'm going to make sure that I'm basically on my own timeline until I have to be on your timeline. And that is something I had not thought of.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
There will be players with all these sports who are like, oh, this is different because I've been working with my guy for the past 5 years, and that's what allows me to feel comfortable. And now that guy is not going to be available for me.
Look,
and that might be an example of what's happening
here.
But, I mean, this is a legitimate star player. He was developing into a superstar before the injury. Like last year, he had a spectacular season.
Oh, yeah.
Very good player. I like their team. Again, Sabonis is really flourishing. Like, he's a legitimate, like, stud big. TJ Warren had a good year. I've always liked Brogdon. Like, they got a good team. Like, I like Indiana. I would not want to face Indiana. And now it's a totally different program without him.
You take
Oladipo out, it does change that six-pack of teams in the East and the way that it's all going to look in the end.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, Malcolm Brogdon has had COVID. He's on that roster. Now, you assume he's going to be able to recover and get back into the bubble, but who knows? I mean, we don't know that for sure. I wouldn't want to lay money on that. But you wonder, you make the point of guys wanting their own guys. And one thing I've come to understand about the NBA, Hayes, covering it for 20-plus years, is, you know, it's I want my own guys, plural. Like, NBA players, especially now in this era where many of them, you know, have 100 or 200 million bucks in the bank, and in the era where LeBron James talks about spending, you know, $1 million annually on his body, just on body care, and we're not talking about, like, lotions. We're talking about staff, and we're talking about, you know, therapists, and we're talking about guys who help him optimize his body. A lot of it is payroll, right? You know, a lot of these guys have multiple guys on their payroll for these very things. And if none of those guys are going to be welcomed into this bubble, which is what we're understanding here, that it's going to be a very skeleton staff, you wonder, you know, what kind of effect that will have. I think we're seeing it right here for the Indiana Pacers. It's having an effect.
Yeah, I think that's likely what's happening here. He's coming off a gruesome injury, but he had returned, right? But he was also likely planning on his own schedule. A lot of load management, gearing up, maybe not even for the first round, more so for the second, third, fourth, if they could get there. And now his schedule has been completely thrown out. And if he can't bring his people who he trusts, which clearly he can't, you can't make an exception for every player's physiotherapist and massage therapist. And you can't have that.
No.
So it does make you wonder, you know, what these guys are trying to negotiate with themselves in terms of how they're going to get in the right headspace to play and perform. Because normalcy, like, I'm not sure the average fan understands what goes into preparation and how different it is from one player to the next. Like, with every sport, there are some guys that do just show up 2 hours before, light stretch, go out there and let's play.
Yeah.
Some guys do that. Other guys, it takes all day
for
them to get to tip off or puck drop. All day, and then they're there until 1, 2 in the morning, you know, throwing up shots and then working on their body and getting this and that done for themselves. And it gets to a point where it's so routine, they have to have it. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens off the court is almost as important as what happens on the court because they're not mutually exclusive.
No.
It's just one big routine, and it doesn't appear as if that's going to be an option once they get to the bubble.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
the
LA Clippers.
That's interesting.
If I'm the LA Clippers, I'm wondering about Kawhi. Because Kawhi, we know this about Kawhi, man. It was a long process. You know, I was thinking it was an hour. It might have been, you know, if you talk to Alex McKechnie, the Raptors director of sports science, now he never spoke about this because he wasn't authorized to during the season. But, you know, he wasn't allowed to speak about it, but you get ideas just hanging around the club about the amount of time Alex McKechnie spent with Kawhi personally in the lead up to games. And it was long. It wasn't like 5 minute stretch and there you go, away you go. It was like a half hour here and a half hour on the table, yeah, and then a half hour on the court before the game doing various other protocols to get that one really bad leg, you know, mobilized and warmed up and ready to roll and activated, as they say. It wasn't small. It was a major issue. And you wonder, like, if they've got this short window for practice that all the teams are going to have, much shorter than normal, if they've got regulations about who can come into your room and who can't, man, that could throw some guys off here. And I think it's going to throw guys like Kawhi off, you'd think, because he's a creature of habit, a creature of routine, and a creature of a very strict protocol that he never veered from. Like, he was obsessive.
Well, I don't think he trusts his own body, quite frankly. I don't think Kawhi Leonard ever really trusted his body. And I don't see how that's going to change once you're at Disney for 3 months. You know, I just don't see it. I think he got himself into a place where he could go out there and perform and fight through it. And we watched him. He started to deteriorate by the end of the run. You know,
by the
worst series he had was the Golden State series.
Yep.
You know, in terms of production and in terms of him looking like himself and taking over games late in games, it was a buildup from that first game against Orlando where he barely played. You know, relatively speaking, I think he played like 31 minutes, and I think that was a lesson to Nick Nurse. Like, okay, we've built it up to here. We got to go now.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've given 82 games. We're going. We're down 1-0 against the Magic team. We should be sweeping here. And they went on to win the next four straight. But then against Philly, it was big-time minutes. Against Milwaukee, big-time minutes, and he seemed to get better as the games went on. And then against Golden State, it was like, okay, now Fred better show up here. You know,
right,
we need Kyle to show up here. And that's a break that KD's not going to be playing. And I wonder about that with this bubble. You're 100% correct. I think he's the guy that you would look to and say, is he going to be able to fight through it? Like, some of these guys in all these sports, they bring like hyperbaric chambers on the road.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's ludicrous what they're sleeping
That's
with,
common,
the contraptions
though.
They have. Yeah. And I don't know. Can you bring that in? I can't imagine. There's got to be a limit at some point. There's one plane.
You're right.
You know?
You're right.
I don't know what you can bring into the bubble.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be bringing a lot of stuff into the bubble, but you're right. It's about people. How many people can you bring into the bubble, and how much support staff can you bring into the bubble? Because you guys have entourages of support staff nowadays at the highest level, and it's going to be fascinating. I wonder too, Hayes, when you look at, you know, the fact that Kawhi, as you say, was running on fumes by the end of it all, given the condition that leg is in. And you wonder now, like, with this whole, you know, condensed situation where there's not going to be travel days like there are in a regular NBA playoffs. It's going to be essentially, you know, it's going to be a lot of every other night, right? For I think there will be some exceptions, but they're trying to get this thing packed into a much smaller window with the 8 regular season games and then the extent of the 16-team playoffs. You wonder how that'll factor in for guys like this too, because maybe that's one thing guys are looking at, saying, wait a second, I got to go every other night for 2 months if this thing goes the way it's supposed to go. No thanks. Like,
yeah.
You know, because Kawhi needed those like 2 and 3 day breaks
Big
that
time.
You would get,
Big
you
time.
Know, between series or between the two, between going from one venue to another. Those were important to Kawhi Leonard. And I think guys like Victor Oladipo, guys who've suffered major injuries, a guy like Kevin Durant, maybe you wonder, you see the tape of Kevin Durant, the video of Kevin Durant playing pickup. He looks ready to go to
looks,
me, Hayes.
He looks great.
He looks ready to go to me.
Absolutely. But I think he was an easier case to determine or to predict because he never stepped back on the floor.
Right.
Right. Like, he never really even got back in the gym and practiced with these guys. Oladipo played 13 games.
Yeah.
Like, he was back.
For sure.
He was officially back, and if the season continued, he would have played the rest of the way. So it's more difficult to explain how you shut down for 4 months, give your body that much more time to recover, and you're still like, I'm out of here. Like, I just don't feel comfortable going in.
When you got a heck of a team.
When you got a very good team.
In an East that is not exactly a foregone conclusion.
No, it's not. And this is, I think, what we're pointing to also explains the importance of having a layup in the first round, you know, and holding off Boston and playing Brooklyn or playing Orlando in the first round or Washington in the first round, which you got to get through the first round in 4 or 5. And if because then you can feel like it's a little bit more of a spread.
Exactly.
Right? Like you're saving yourself for the second round as opposed to going all out in the first. And I mean, this could change things in the East. Again, with Oladipo out, they're currently tied with Philly in terms of them being 14 games back in Milwaukee. They're
right.
Two games back in Miami. And that's probably going to affect how the 3, 4, 5, 6 seeds all look in the end and how that first round looks. I still wouldn't sleep on Indiana. They're still going to be tough, you know, but
yeah.
Without Oladipo, they're clearly more of an inferior team than they would have been with him. And, I think, again, you look at the Raptors, you got to hold on to that 2 spot, you know, put in a little bit more effort in the front to kind of cruise through that second layer of this whole thing and then set yourself up for whoever you're going to play come the second round.
Yeah.
And, you know, Oladipo's not the only one making a splash in terms of what's going on with this COVID era that we're in and we're about to see in the sports world with Mike Trout coming out today. And Mike Trout, who never says anything, and then when he finally does speak, it's a bombshell. Like,
yeah.
Now, I think the some of the headlines have been misleading because he came out and he said he's not all too comfortable with this whole setup and just playing in general, but he is there and he is going to play, right? Like, he didn't call it in from home and say, I'm not there day one. I'll let you know over the weekend if I'm coming. He's there. He's working
right.
out with the team right now. Video and pictures of him wearing a mask running the bases, but it's based on his situation. You know, it's not about him getting sick. It's about him passing it on to his wife who's pregnant. There's a baby that's due, I believe, any day now, and that's his concern. And I understand that concern. I get it.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Mike Trout, I think the baseball world, they got to feel like they're getting lucky here because he's willing to play. Because that would have been a huge story if he said, you know what, I'm not feeling it. I'm out of here. Even though
yep.
he's not a big personality, he's still the best player by a large
oh,
margin.
Yeah.
And without your best player, man, your whole program, it goes even more under the microscope.
Well, exactly. And what does that say about his faith in Major League Baseball's
not much.
Proposal to play, you know, with 30 teams hopscotching around North America on flights, going through hotel rooms, getting from one city to the other through with buses and the rest of the regular routine in a very irregular moment, right, Hayes? And I don't think the more people I talk to around this, it's just people are just dumbfounded that they actually think this is a good idea. And I think Mike Trout's sitting here going, wait a second, like I got my wife and I got a newborn on the way. Why would I bring this home to them? On a regular basis? Why would I want to go into this so-called Major League Baseball bubble, which isn't a bubble at all because it's a traveling circus that's, you know, got 30 moving parts going all over North America. But why would I want to step into that and then step out of it and expose my family, you know, my progeny, my beloved wife to this? I mean, and I can see where he's coming from.
Yeah. Oh, for sure, man. Like, and if he's thinking it and he's willing to say it out loud, there's a lot of guys further down the depth chart that are thinking it but just don't want to say it.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like Mike Trout can do or say whatever he wants at this point, and he's still willing to commit, and he's still there, and he's going to play because he feels like there's an obligation to his team, to his fan base. He just signed a new contract. He's had no playoff success at all in his career, so there might be a bit of a legacy play here for Mike Trout. He's looking at this thinking, if we can find a way to get in, maybe I finally punch a ticket that I haven't been able to do throughout my career. I think he's only played 5 playoff games ever.
What a shame.
They got bounced in the ALDS the 1 year they got in. And I don't know if the Angels are going to make that work. I mean, I look at Houston as a superior team. I think Oakland might be a superior team. I don't know if the Angels are a team that can get in. But
well, you got to believe anybody can get in this year.
At this point, yeah, it is
almost
much more of a crapshoot.
Almost anybody.
Almost, yeah. Like Detroit's not getting in.
No.
Kansas City, Baltimore, they're not getting in. But they've got an opportunity. Yeah, of course. It wouldn't be a shock at all if the Angels got there. And I think that's probably what's been weighing on Mike Trout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, yeah, you know, I got this personal situation, which is the utmost importance to me. But I also got a commitment to my team and the fact that we got a shot here and I'm the man.
Yes.
And without Mike Trout, we're in big trouble. Like, maybe done. So he's going to play and we'll see where that goes. But I think Gordon Hayward came out today as well in terms of a wife being pregnant.
He's going to have to leave the bubble at some point to go see the birth of his son or his baby. I'm not sure if it's a boy or a girl.
Yeah, his wife is due in September, and he's basically like, if we're still in it, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm leaving for 2 weeks or whatever it is. I guess
you got to leave, and then you got to quarantine when you come back.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's going to be the strangest sports experience we've ever had. Although our lives, this is something we've never experienced and hopefully we never have to ever again. And at least sports is coming back in some capacity.
We think. We hope.
We hope.
But we're not sure.
We're not sure. Pascal Siakam was speaking today. We'll tell you what he had to say about being the number one guy come playoff time. And, again, we got a bunch of lists we're going to get to today. The three players in the East, the Raptors, should be most fearful of meeting up against. So we'll get to that. The three things that have to break for the Blue Jays in order for them to make this a playoff run this year. And we'll go around the NHL, the 24 teams that are going to be still playing come the end of the month or early August, and put together our team in terms of the players we would take if we were building a team for a game tonight. Three forwards, two defensemen, one goalie, based on the players available to us with the 24-team playoff coming up. So we'll get to that later this afternoon. Big news out of Washington, potentially big news in terms of the NFL and a name change. We'll tell you about that next. All right, Cindy Bourne will join us from the Washington Post in just a couple of moments. It sounds as if, it looks as if the Washington Redskins are finally going to get a new name. It's going to be the end of a name that has been, very, I wouldn't even say it's been polarizing. I think the only people that hold on to that name are the fans, and they feel like it's a part of their history, and they grew up fans of this team and that name, and as a result, they want to hold on to it. And I can understand, you know, the attachment to a team name. I get that. I understand that. But this is a name that has been steeped in racism for quite some time. There's been a push to get this name changed for quite some time. FedEx, who is their name is on the stadium in D.C. They, I guess, went public with their pursuit of a name change, or their desire to have the name changed. And I guess Nike jumped on board with that, which I find always rich when Nike in their history is, you know, they're leading the cause for change.
Exactly.
When you consider what, you know, their whole operation and the way it works. But they jumped on board and they stopped selling any apparel on their website that features the name Redskins. So now the owner, Dan Snyder, who is very unliked in the market, I think, throughout NFL circles, throughout sports circles. You look at his history, it's not a good one. It's not a positive one, just based on the way he handles the whole operation. I guess he's launched some big review process, and it appears as if the tidal wave is just too strong and it's going to have to change. And it likely will change before the beginning of next season, which I think is very, very predictable considering what's going on in society right now.
No doubt, Hayes. I mean, I find this highly suspicious, right? Like, it's the right thing to do. Don't get me wrong. And I've been one of those people saying that. I mean, I'm not some sort of revolutionary in saying that. I think it's been a mainstream opinion. It's not.
Yeah,
it hasn't
exactly
been some radical opinion.
No,
that,
it's not at all.
That this name isn't appropriate. This was the Washington racial slurs, as a lot of people called them. Like, there was no debate about what that name is in the eyes of indigenous peoples. So that really wasn't a debate anymore. The debate was, would Daniel Snyder, the owner of the team, ever get off his high horse, and stop being stubborn and actually make the change? And the reason I'm suspicious is because suddenly, Hayes, it looks as though this is a moment where he's doing it because of one reason, because the money makes sense now. This is the money is driving him to do this, not the pressure, not the right thing. This is about money. When you got a sponsor saying, we'd like you to change the name, and when you've got Nike saying, we'd like you to change the name, because guess what? We can sell the new logo. We can sell new uniforms en masse. You got one of the best fan bases, most loyal fan bases in all of North American sports, and they're all going to buy a new jersey and a new cap with the new name on it. You know, when all those things line up, suddenly, cha-ching, guess what? Now we are on the moral high horse, and we're saying, yeah, we probably should review this thing.
Well, they're reviewing
it,
exactly. They're not going to jump to any, you know, conclusion here, because apparently this caught them off guard. Let's bring in Cindy Bourne from the Washington Post. Cindy, thank you for joining us. Do you see it the same way? This is more about economics than ethics when it comes to Snyder and the team and their apparent decision or this pathway that they're on towards finally changing the name?
I think it's probably a combination of factors. Money, for sure. There isn't an NFL owner who isn't cognizant of money and doesn't like to make money. You know, they didn't get to be billionaires by accident, most of them. And I think there was also, you know, the NFL saw the writing on the wall when Patrick Mahomes and some other players, you know, made the video after the George Floyd murder. Roger Goodell came out and said, you know what, Black Lives Matter, we didn't get it, I'm sorry. You know, this is clearly where the NFL is going. These are, you know, their new stars, and the NFL seems to have had an awakening. Now, back to Snyder. You know, I think he wants a new stadium badly, and he wants it in Washington, D.C., where, you know, the old stadium was back in the good old days. Well, guess what? The D.C. city fathers and mothers don't want to give him the money, and of course he wants taxpayer money, because they all do, to build the stadium. They won't do it as long as the nickname is in place. So, you know, there are a number of factors here. But, yeah, money is there. And, you know, it's a combination of money and a tipping point. You know, these guys can read the writing on the wall, and they also know that they've got an older fan base. They want younger fans. I mean, look at how NASCAR quickly swiveled and got rid of the Confederate flag. I mean, there is a greater awakening going on.
No doubt, Sydney. But, you know, these teams, you know, as you point out, these teams are run by billionaires. They're largely dictatorships because the league is what it is. And Daniel Snyder has said more than once that, and I'm going to use the word he's used, he will never change the name of this team. I'm wondering how, even with this review process in motion and even with all these things churning around him and all those factors you outlined, you know, maybe driving him to this moment, how difficult will it be for him to say, you know, well, I said never before, but now we're doing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the team he's rooted for since he was a little kid, and, you know, it's tough. I will say that our reporters at the Post have been working this story diligently. They are told that it's very likely that it will change potentially in time for the 2020 season. You will notice Nike has taken all the Redskins gear off its online shop. You know, you'll also recall that Nike has been out in the forefront on social justice. You know, they backed Colin Kaepernick. They've backed some of the initiatives from LeBron James and Serena Williams. And, you know, for Nike to take down the gear for one team this close to the season is significant. Another thing I also believe, and our sources are telling us, I think this is farther down the line than they're letting on. You know, they said that, I think Goodell said that, you know, and Snyder both said that they'd been talking about this for a couple of weeks, and I think it has been in the pipeline.
We're chatting with Cindy Bourne from the Washington Post about the latest development in terms of the Washington Redskins and their name and how it appears to be in the process of being changed. There's a review process currently ongoing among ownership, and there's a big push from corporate America and a lot of fans and media throughout the country. But in terms of the city itself or the fan base itself, how do the fans generally poll on this, Cindy? In other words, you know, how many fans are pushing for a change within the city, within the fan base?
I would say, you know, Redskins fans are a pretty downtrodden lot. They haven't had much to cheer for 20 years. And when they do go to the stadium, it's one of the worst game day experiences in the entire NFL. Generally, they don't sell out to Redskins fans. You know, it's mostly NFC East and opposing teams that come to dominate the stadium. And if you were to wander around the streets of Washington and Virginia and Maryland, the area here, you would be stunned to see how much more Capitals and Nationals gear there is than Redskins gear. You'll see Redskins gear to a degree, but not like you have in other cities. You know, they've really just kind of worn out the fan base. I have friends who have kids who are, you know, teenagers. They don't want that. They have season tickets. The kids don't want to go to the games because it's a long haul out to the stadium. The stadium is awful, and the team stinks. They've never seen a team that's won, you know, three Super Bowls. What do they know? And, you know, I can't tell you the number of people I know who have had season tickets and ended up giving them up because the kids don't want to go, their wives don't want to go. And guess what? They'd rather go, you know, they'd rather give up the season tickets and get tickets to like two or three games they want, get really good seats on StubHub because you generally can.
Right.
Well, and that's a rare thing in the NFL for sure, Cindy. I mean, especially in a legacy town like Washington. So if indeed they do move forward on this, and as you pointed, if indeed they're farther down the line than they're actually letting on, if this has been in the works for some time, do you have any thoughts as to, you know, which way they're heading? Like, do you have a front runner for what they're going to name this thing?
No, although my personal favorite is Rough Riders. I'm impartial, whether it's one word or two.
No, we own that one up here. We had two teams at the same time with the same name. So don't start stealing our stuff. Let's not get crazy here. Come on, Cindy.
Okay, fine. No, not yet. I mean, some people are saying Warriors. You know, you would think that the NFL being as smart as it is about these things, that whatever the name is going to be, they already know what it is. They've got it trademarked. They've got it, you know, the website domain. You would think they have all of that under control already. On the other hand, that's, you know, not generally the kind of forethought that the Redskins give to anything, and they often get caught. But, you know, you would think that they have something. I've heard Warriors. I'm not sure Warriors really works. They, you know, Snyder mentioned something about the military in his note. I don't know what how exactly you're going to do that, but I don't know.
I would suggest don't do a fan poll. That's what we did up here, and we got stuck with the Raptors for 25 years. And then, you know, once Jurassic Park kind of blew over, people were like, did we really name the team the Raptors? Like, maybe we could have done something different.
Wasn't that the kind of around the same time, you know, Mighty Ducks? And,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, I don't know. Maybe the Hamiltons.
There you go.
That won't really work.
Maybe. You never know.
Who knows? I suspect that, you know, that they probably have a pretty good idea of what they're going to do. And, you know, this is the owners, you know, the owners have seen the writing on the wall. I've always said this about the Redskins. They're an underperforming franchise. And I always felt that what was going to catch up to Snyder, regardless of the name, was when the other, let's see, 30 NFL owners, not the Packers, but the other 30 owners took a look around and said, you know what? This franchise is underperforming, right? I mean, if you own a bunch of businesses and you see one in an area that is underperforming, what do? And, you know, I think there might have been some pressure there.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure. Well, this story, it's developing. We'll see where it goes. And let's hope football even happens in a couple of months. There's no guarantees at this point. But
exactly.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Cindy.
Oh, thanks. Great to talk to you guys.
There's Cindy Bourne from the Washington Post. Rough Riders would be intriguing. That is one of the goofiest stories ever, that there were two teams in, what was it, an 8-team league at that point?
Exactly.
Maybe 9-team. And they both had the same name. Like, it just,
but spelled differently.
Exactly, as she points out. Was it one word? Is it two words? It's a great name. I will say Rough Riders is a great handle for a team. I like the name. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders is a great sports name.
It is.
But you can't have in the same league two teams with the same name, especially when there's 8 teams in the whole league.
Exactly.
Like, it's just absurd that the CFL ever allowed that to happen.
It was absurd, but it was awfully Canadian, wasn't
it? It was.
Like,
yeah,
we can't
very
make
polite.
Them change. They don't want to change, and they don't want to change, so why should they have to change?
No, nice compromise.
Yeah.
The Canadian compromise, no compromise. We'll
exactly.
just both do it. I wonder about the color schemes and whether or not they'll change the colors. You know, like, if you're going to change this name, are you changing everything? Are you changing the whole scope of your image?
Right.
Down in Washington, I don't know, and I wouldn't be surprised if Nike was involved somehow in what this is going to look like, and because they're thinking money too, like you said, if you start pumping out new paraphernalia and new new apparel, it's gonna fly off the shelves.
And part of the reason, like it's the nation's capital, right? It's not rocket science. What do you think the Capitals did when they got smart under Ted Leonsis? Remade their image with the eagle logo and the red, white, and blue everywhere, with an emphasis on red. The Nationals are red, white, and blue.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what the Redskins probably should do here, right?
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I don't really trust Dan Snyder, and we'll see. We'll see what he comes up with. I would picture him fighting this from behind the scenes, but it's probably just a lost cause. At some point, Goodell and the other owners, like Cindy just pointed out, are probably going to step in and say, enough. Like, you got to – we're going to team up on you here. It's got to happen. It's got to change.
But I spoke to a sports sponsorship guy who's always got an interesting take on these types of things. And he was basically saying like Snyder is so stubborn that the only way he would do it is if the money made sense. Right. So he's looking at it going, wait a second. The tide has turned here. People will applaud me for changing the name and they'll go and buy my gear in incredible numbers when I change the name, and Nike's behind me. We'll design an incredible new logo that'll be trendy and cool, and we'll make out like bandits on this thing, and we'll look like we finally saw the light in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, even though that's got nothing to do with anything.
No, it really clearly doesn't. I mean, if you know anything about the way these owners operate, they'll say everything they can. They're all about gestures and all that, but very rarely do they follow through. And if this is a follow-through, it's going to be coming at the expense of people's pocketbooks. And they know they're going to end up making money off of it. And that's probably the best sales pitch of all. As callous and cold and calculated as that might sound, I think it's a reality. Our buddy Carlo Koliakova will join us in about 25 minutes. We're going to get to our NHL list. We've got a Jays list we're going to get to, Raptors list we're going to get to this afternoon. The 4 p.m. hour is brought to you by LeaseBusters. They will rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic, maybe helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to LeaseBusters.com. With Dave Feshchuk from the Star and Brian Hayes, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Carlo Koliakova will join us in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. The 4 p.m. hour brought to you by LeaseBusters. LeaseBusters will get you out of your car lease today. It's as easy as pie a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit LeaseBusters.com. We're going to get to our list of three players in the East. The Raptors should be not necessarily scared of, but fearing the most, and be prepared for the most. So you and I will go back and forth on that. And Pascal Siakam was speaking with the media earlier today via teleconference. They're still down in Fort Myers. And everything seems to be all good for the Raps. I mean, they keep saying every player that comes out, they're like, this is weird. It's different. But that's 2020. And that's the COVID world we're living in right now.
Yep.
But by all accounts, they're healthy. They're all accounted for. They're working out. Everything's all good. They're gearing up. And Siakam was talking about being the number one option come playoff time. And I'm not surprised that he sounded confident. I'm not surprised that he would reference his experience as a number one guy through 60-some-odd games so far this season. But I will say regular season success and experience does not hold weight in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
And it is a massive learning curve to be the man in the playoffs, a massive learning curve. And the fact is a lot of guys can't get there. Very, very few guys can get to a point where you just know they're going to get every shot off when they have to and hit the biggest shots and be dependable in the biggest moments. It is a rare few in the NBA, and I hope Siakam can get there, but I am not convinced it's going to happen this year.
No.
I think it is imperative. Kyle Lowry shows up. Marc Gasol shows up. Serge Ibaka shows up. Nick Nurse coaches his ass off because – and Siakam's got to play and play well. But I think if you're relying on him to do what Kawhi did last year, you got something coming, man.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, that's just not the way the NBA works.
To me, this team, it's going to have to be closer by committee.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Pascal Siakam's got quite the repertoire to really be the man in all situations, just throw him the ball and let him go to town a la Kawhi. Like, Kawhi had that special skill set, right? Like, I'm going to take this ball, I'm going to get to my spot, I'm going to shoot a jump shot from that spot, and there's nothing you will be able to do about it because I'm stronger than you, I'm quicker than you, I'm smarter than you, and I'm going to get there. That's a rare, rare guy, as you point out, Hayes, and I don't think Pascal Siakam's quite there yet. But they've got, as you listed off those guys, like Lowry's a big shot maker, Fred VanVleet athlete's a big shot maker. Yep. When you've got enough guys who are willing to take that last shot, to take a clutch shot in a clutch moment, I think you can make it happen. I think you can make it work, right? You run a set, and there's four guys on the floor. Marc Gasol's not afraid to shoot. He's not a willing shooter, but he's not afraid to shoot it. Serge Ibaka's not afraid to shoot it. You know, none of these guys
Norman
are afraid.
Norman Powell shoot it.
Norman Powell exactly. shoot it. Remember the first game of the season, they went to Norman Powell as the closer. He didn't make the shot, but he took it. You know, so they got guys that are willing shooters in big moments. And I think with a coach like Nick Nurse and a bunch of guys who are not selfish and very selfless and will move the ball to the appropriate spot, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to be relying on. It's going to be by committee. And it's not that Pascal maybe can't get there in 3 or 4 years.
No.
I'm just speaking to the history of the NBA. Like when LeBron first became the man, he couldn't get his team over the hop. We just watched Jordan and what he went through his first couple of years in the playoffs. And even when he – and that's Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Right? Like even when he put up 60 points at the Boston Garden, they still lost in five
yeah.
or whatever. But there was a learning curve to get there. And Siakam had the benefit of going on a run last year, which was huge. The benefit of having this year where he was, you know, the number one guy. But now you're dealing with every team you play is going to be focused on you every single night.
Right.
Like every minute you're on the floor, they're going to have a guy, if not two guys on you, and the coaching staff is going to basically assign a coach on his own staff and say, your whole job is stop Siakam.
Yep.
And that's a totally different beast.
It is.
You know, just because you did it against, you know, Brooklyn in November doesn't mean you can pull it off against Milwaukee in the conference finals.
No, and we're going to see. Know? We're going
and
see.
I hope he can, but it's just history would suggest it's going to take some time.
It's going to take time, and you know we're going to see exactly how influential Kawhi was. Like I think he was influential because he won them games, right? He was that good. He made the shot of the playoffs. You know, the signature moment of the franchise's history.
Right.
He's that good. But the Kawhi effect is also what kind of influence did he leave behind, right? What kind of things did he teach a guy like Pascal Siakam about how to operate in those moments? What kind of things did he teach the rest of his teammates about how to be, you know, steady as she goes, as much as, you know, the place is going nuts, although I guess the place in Orlando won't be going nuts. But, you know, when your internal mechanisms are going nuts because you're in the biggest moment of your career or one of them, how do you handle yourself? And Kawhi was a picture of exactly how to handle yourself, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And you wonder how much that rubbed off. I do think guys have, you have to think back a few months, but I remember, you know, being around that gym a lot and guys talking about that quite frequently. Like there really is a feeling like there was a legacy.
So.
There's a legacy beyond, you know, Kawhi, the memory of that shot. It's a legacy of habits and the handing down of demeanor and kind of how you go about your business.
Right. And I buy that because they were on the run for it, right? Like they won a title. They were all a part of it. It wasn't just Kawhi that won it. Like they were all there. They were all a part of it. We all saw their demeanor coming off the court when they're winning series. Like that shot of them walking off the court against Golden State.
Yeah.
I think when they were up, I want to say 3-1. I think it was after game 4
exactly. In
Golden State. And they're walking out. There's no celebration.
No.
It's just all business. I expect that mentality to carry over. But who's going to hit the shot? Right?
Yeah.
Like that's
you need a closer. You do need a closer.
That's a different story. Yeah, at some point. And it doesn't have to be one guy necessarily if you have guys with that mentality that are willing to put up the shot. And I think that's what I'm bracing for. I'm not bracing for Siakam averaging 43 minutes a night and throwing up 30 shots a night. And it's like, wow, this guy took over. Like it's Pascal time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're going to see that. I think what he needs to do is contribute on both sides of the board or of the ball, bring the energy that he's famous for, hit the open shots.
Yes.
Because there's not going to be many of them. You got to hit the, like, remember game 1 of the NBA finals. He that's what he did.
Yeah.
Like what did he? I think he was like 17 for 19 from the field or something.
Insane.
In game 1.
I don't remember the
crazy.
Number. It was crazy. And you know, Draymond Green gave him props and said, "Hey, he played his ass off and he absolutely wiped the floor with me tonight." And you're right, like that. You know, a lot of times, like I do think we somewhat overrate the closer in some ways because a lot of it does come down to, do you have guys who will make shots in big moments, right? It's not necessarily just the classic Michael Jordan, throw me the ball
right.
and watch me operate. That's handy to have, don't get me wrong. There's certain end game situations with, you know, tie games or down one or, you know, obviously, yeah, it's nice.
But
to
look
be
at
able
Robert
to
Ory.
Exactly.
Like Robert Ory's not in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Like he's
big
was
shot
big
Bob.
Shot Bob.
Exactly. And that's what you need. And I think they've got guys like that. You know, they've got guys who will step up. And Fred VanVleet showed it. I mean, Fred VanVleet got a finals MVP vote from Hubie Brown for the number of shots he made that were of significance, right? And rightly so.
Yeah, he's willing to shoot. You know, he will shoot. I think Siakam will shoot. I think Serge will take a big shot.
Yeah.
Like, he did that more often this year than he has in the past because I think, again, Kawhi was out of the picture. DeMar was out of the picture. I think these guys realize, okay, it is kind of open season in terms of who's hot and who's willing to go. And the way Nurse operates and coaches, he's seeking that out. You know, he's seeking ball movement and find the open shot. And whoever's got it, you better have that mentality that you're going to take it. You're not going to hit it every time, but you got to take it. You know, that's the big thing. That's the first hurdle. If it goes
exactly
in, it's a different story.
I think that's the change in tone. Not to dump on DeMar DeRozan, Hayes, because he's done a ton for this city and he's one of the great, you know, stories of the franchise's history in terms of developing into an all-star from something that I think a lot of people didn't see an all-star budding into. But, you know, like when DeMar DeRozan was in those situations a lot of time, because of the fact that he didn't make the three-pointer and that wasn't part of his repertoire, and because of the fact that he kind of had a more predictable kind of a predictable way of attacking defenses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time.
Too predictable, I would say. You know, they bogged down. But now with Lowry and VanVleet, who are such heady players with incredible intelligence about where the ball should go, and of course Marc Gasol, who's one of the great big men passers that we've seen in the league in recent memory. I mean, all those guys kind of working together, I think it's a big reason why Kawhi had the opportunity to operate in such
Yeah, well, I
such
think it all factored
space.
In. There's no question about that. Carlo Kuliakova coming up in the next hour. Some news out of baseball in terms of COVID testing. We'll tell you about that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.